And this is Life Matters on Radio National. Richard Ada here. Now, teens and taking risks, it goes with the territory. In fact, it's critical for brain development. You can't become an adult without doing things that make all adults, and especially your parents, absolutely terrified. Tonight on ABC TV, a new series begins on the science of the teenage brain with an episode that's all about risk.
I usually like to take risks just for the experience and just don't really care what people tell you to do or just do what you want.
I've taken drugs, I've drunk alcohol, I've done many stupid things.
If you love your cars and you like a bit of attention, you know, you just turn it up, open up, drop the window, and let the glasses or your shirt or your necklace or whatever's hanging off the windscreen do the rest. And when you got that attention, you got it all.
Yes, the teens, the risk-taking teens in tonight's show, it's on ABC One. With me now is the presenter of the series, Steve Kinane, no stranger to this studio. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Richard.
And Associate Professor Stephen Wood from the Neuropsychiatry Centre at the University of Melbourne. Hello, Stephen.
Hi there, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Now, Steve Kinane, yeah. I want to start with you. What were you like in your routine?
Look, I did everything, every form of risk-taking behaviour, I would say, except driving fast. Because I didn't have my license till I was 20. But otherwise, everything else I probably did. Still got the scars to prove it. And luckily, I got out the other side. So I think it's pretty standard that teenagers risks. I don't think you really can fight the biology on this one.
I'm exactly the same, actually. But I was in cars. Other people were driving extremely fast. And I can remember feeling this kind of bizarre high about driving, you know, ridiculously.
Yeah.
Stupidly fast.
Yeah, you get this high out of taking risks, but also you get a high, and it's one of the things we talk about in the program. You get this dopamine rush into your brain from impressing your peer group. So not only do you like taking risks on your own, you like doing things that impress your peer group, and often that involves, particularly with males, taking risks.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Wood, why do adolescents need to do this?
That's a good question. I mean, probably one of the main reasons is that the sort of things that give people a buzz, give you, you know, a reward, if you like, just aren't quite as rewarding when you're a teenager. So there's some pretty good evidence now that teenagers just don't get the same kick, if you like, out of, for example, winning a financial reward as adults do. So they're looking for something different. They're looking for something else to give them a buzz. And often it's something with a bit of an adrenaline rush. And that tends to be why they are risk takers. They're looking for a new sensation.
But they don't even call it risk. I mean, it's about labels as much as anything. They call it fun.
That's right. And certainly I think that it's probably, it's a silly sort of thing to say that they are they're engaged in risk-taking behaviour. They're sensation seekers. They know the answers as to what is risky and what's not risky. If you ask them in a nice, settled environment where there's no pressure on, but when you put them in, a more complex situation where emotions are running hot, then those sorts of critical faculties go out the window.
Well, why is that their judgment so poor? And I mean, well, I'll come to the second part of this in a minute, because there's this very telling scene where you have Elias, who's a young man. Who indulges in risk-taking behaviour, physical risk-taking behaviour. Geez, I wouldn't want to be his dad. And Steve Kinane, who's sitting with me, and they both do this test of risk-taking, of assessing risk, and the grown-up is so much better than the adolescent.
Oh, yes. I mean, this is one of the remarkable things. I mean, one of the main reasons why Steve outperformed Elias, if you like, in terms of assessing risk, was that we put them both under some time pressure. You know, we told them they had to do it as fast as they could. And that really lets you see the difference between the teenage decision-making process and the adult. If we'd given Elias all the time he wanted to sort the pictures into risky and non-risky, he would probably have done really well. And one of the interesting things for the way that teenagers think is that this is a personal thing. If you'd asked him to sort them into risky and non-risky for his friends, he would probably have performed very similar to Steve. It's about what you judge risky for yourself that makes a difference here.
That's a really interesting point Stephen makes there, because we were showing photos of different scenarios of what was risky and was not, and there was one of big wave surfing, and Elias didn't think that was risky, because he's a surfer.
Yeah.
He thinks, oh, I can do that. That's no problem.
But he didn't think all sorts of stupid things were risky.
That's like true.
Climbing mountains.
Rock climbing and all kinds of things. What were
the actual results, Steve? Do you remember?
Yeah. Out of about 20 photos, Elias got 12 wrong and I got one wrong. And I completed the test about 20% quicker than Elias did. So it goes back to what Stephen was saying, to that delayed factor under pressure, couldn't process risk as fast and got a whole lot of them wrong.
All right. Well, Stephen Wood, what is going on there with the adolescent brain? Because we now have an idea of why this happens, don't we?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. The way we think about adolescent brain development at the moment is that there are two separate processes. So that the first one to develop that changes with the onset of puberty, you know, that sudden surge in sex hormones around the start of the second decade of people's lives, that seems to be associated with emotional changes in drive. So young people get more interested in their peers, wanting to hang out with them rather than with their parents. You get a bit more emotionally moody, if you like, up and down. And the bit of your brain that controls those things, that controls your behavior, lets you sort of hang back and think about it, or is able to regulate your emotions a bit better, that just takes a lot longer to develop. That seems not to be completed until maybe the first years of your 20s.
This is executive function, this decision-making thing, isn't it?
That's
right. In the front part of your brain.
That's right. So the sort of limbic, the emotional part of the brain, develops quite quickly in puberty. But the executive decision-making control part of your brain, the brakes, if you like, that takes a lot longer to develop.
So, in fact, Steve Kinnane, the insurance companies have been right for years because, as you'll recall, as a young driver, your premiums come down at about 25.
That's right, and a lot of adolescent psychologists talk about that, about the brain not really being fully productive and grown until the mid-20s. And we've seen that too with the changes to P-plate laws in certain states where they decide, okay, we're not going to allow a whole lot of people of the same age group to be in a car when there's young men driving it.
On Life Matters today, we're talking about, I suppose, the science of teens, and because there's a new series begins tonight on ABC One. It's called Whatever, and it's presented by Steve Kinnane, who is a voice many of you will be familiar with, and it features Associate Professor Stephen Wood from the University of Melbourne. This one's about risk. Well, Steve Kinnane, you've just mentioned it. Actually, Stephen Wood has too. Social approval, because that's a powerful, that changes things, doesn't it? There's a difference between the risks you take by yourself and the risks you take when you're surrounded by peers or people of the opposite sex.
That's right. And Stephen Wood mentioned before about financial rewards and how even financial rewards aren't as important to teens as a social reward, even though teens are broke. You know, they need money. You'd think a financial reward would be a huge incentive. And one of the things we do on the program tonight is me and Peter, a 19-year-old, have a race around a racetrack. And the first time we do it, the incentive is, about $50 or something like that,
yes,
which would fill up Peter's petrol tank. So there's an incentive for him to beat me. And so we have a race around the track, and sure enough, Peter takes a few more risks, pushes the edges, and is faster than me, and he beats me around the track. But then we bring another thing into play, which is three young women.
Attractive young women.
That's right, who've worked on Home and Away as bikini extras.
Right.
It's a little bit manipulative, I know, Richard, but...
It's extremely manipulative. I would drive faster in those circumstances.
That's right. And sure enough, he pushes it further.
They didn't get you to drive again. I'd like to see how you'd go.
No, of course I would have just driven like a nana, but, you know, being a mature adult. But yes, he cranks it up a notch, knocks over one of the witch's hats, and it's representative of that issue of the social reward is much more important than to the financial reward. And we see this with the risks, going back to the risk-taking, is that they'll do anything to impress their peer group to get that social reward, and that could involve risking their lives as well, you know. Anything to avoid social death, they could risk physical death.
Well, actually, and that goes for loss aversion too. There's another experiment. This is not with Stephen Wood. It's with Andrew Fuller, actually, who was on this show just the other day talking about tricky people. But on this one, you do an experiment with a young woman who's not a physical risk taker.
No.
And she's offered money for what different risks she'd take.
That's
so
right.
So one, she has to select a physical risk, and I think she selects taking a mountain bike down a muddy path.
That's right. And she is a goth, so, you know, goths don't like getting their velvet smeared with mud. So
That's
we can
right.
understand that.
And I think he has to offer her $300 before she would agree to do that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is the social risk, which is giving up the mobile, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. She can't contemplate it. I think it ends up going over $1,000.
It is $1,000, yeah. I think, before she would give it up for 2 months.
Mm.
Yeah, whereas right. she's much more likely to actually hurt herself going down the muddy trail.
Exactly. Than be socially isolated from her peer group. That is everything to her and to all teenagers.
Stephen Wood, if I could come back to you, with the brain differences that you've just alluded to, and they're really quite profound. They're talked about as architectural. They're that important. Does that mean we should be letting teenagers off the hook when they do dumb things? They just can't help themselves?
Yeah, this is a very important question, I think. And part of the problem is that, I guess from a legal perspective, things need to be black and white. There is a legal age of criminal responsibility where you're treated as an adult, or there's an age at which you're regarded as having critical faculties to vote. And yet we know that brain development is much more, dimensional than that. You don't just suddenly turn a switch the day you become 18 and your brain is now an adult brain.
Well, we know it isn't.
That's right. But some people who are younger than 18 have really great decision-making capabilities. Some people who are in their mid-20s are still having trouble with controlling their behaviour. I think my personal perspective is that we should probably take this into consideration at the level of, say, criminal sentencing, rather than saying that teens don't have responsibility for their own choices. There are plenty of teenagers who grow up and they don't kill their mates in a car, for example.
Yes.
Even though they almost always will take risks. And I think it's probably more appropriate to say, well, if the worst happens, it probably should be treated as an issue on the side of sentencing rather than on the side of whether you're responsible or not.
We looked at this issue last year, Richard, on the Hack Half Hour with fighting and why young guys fight. And the social workers I spoke to, it said so often young guys have got into fights and ended up in juvenile detention where they don't think of the consequences. That forward thinking, that forward planning part that's part of the rational part of the brain is not engaged.
It's fascinating, this whole idea, and I'm sure the whole series begins tonight, whatever, The Science of Teens. It's presented by Steve Kinnane and features Associate Professor Stephen Wood from the University of Melbourne. Starts tonight at 8 on ABC One. And starting at 10:05 on Radio National, it's The Book Show. Ramona, good morning.
Good morning, yes. And we're going to go back and have a chat with Robert Silvers, who's the editor of the New York Review of Books. I like talking to him every so often.
Mm.
And he's talking about a landmark Holocaust essay he's just published, a gossipy letter from Isaiah Berlin, who you don't think of as being a bit of a gossip.
You do not,
very
no.
eminent philosopher. And then something you'll be interested in, I'm sure, this idea about why not letting kids roam around like we used to do when we were kids is bad for civilization and literature and imagination.
I'm completely with you on that. Join Ramona after the news for The Book Show. Now, tomorrow on Life Matters, Friday Talkback, and it's all about selling out. Just ask Peter Garrett, being accused of selling out can be a real insult. But does changing your position on something have to mean that you've abandoned your principles? What about the freedom to grow and change? What about if the facts change, being able to change your mind? Love to hear from you on selling out tomorrow. Have a think about it. Give us a ring after 9:00.